always feel like at the beginning of a project, I'm not entirely sure what I need to ask because I don't know yet what I don't know. And that's an important
uncertainty.
Part. It is. And it's an exciting part, but it's kind of like, okay, I'm feeling my way here. Hello, and welcome to Emerging Form. I'm Christy Ashwanden.
And I'm Rosemary Wetela-Tromer, and this is a podcast on creative process. And today is extra special because, Christy, we get to talk about something that you have been working on for years.
Forever. It feels like forever.
Okay. All right. It feels like forever, but just years.
It feels like my imaginary friend. You know, it's like, oh, yeah. Here. Oh, you're working on a podcast. Yeah. It's like I really, during the duration of this project, I regret sharing that I was working on it because anyone who I told, which is not a lot of people, by the way, but like I told my dad, which I mean, I love my dad. I love to share what I'm doing with him. But every time I see him, every time I talk to him, he's like, how's the podcast? And I'm like, oh, Dad, please stop.
Okay. So before we even tell people about what the podcast is, let's just put a little sweet pause on this and talk about when is the right time to tell someone you're working on a big project that you know will take you years?
Oh, that's a really good question. That's funny. You know, I feel like there's different answers to this. Like, definitely, I think anyone who's ever worked on a book knows that, like, at some point you want no one to know because you really, like, listeners, the worst question you can ever ask someone writing a book is, how's the book going? Right. Like, literally never ask that question. Never. This is a different, so this project was a little bit different because it was something like I actually, you know, I got a grant, like I had funding to do it. I had a commitment, you know, Scientific American had agreed in advance they were going to publish it. So like, yeah, you know, which is basically the same as like having a book contract where you're like, okay, I'm on the hook, I got to do this. But it was also, there were all these other factors. Basically, the project took a lot longer than I had expected, not because of things I was doing necessarily, but some other things. Scientific American was changing some of their back end stuff. They wanted to wait. So anyway, there are reasons beyond me. So like my work on the project had been done for quite a while, although I did some of the finished work was quite recent, but like the sort of big heavy lifting was done, you know, a while ago. And so, but it's just been sort of like hurry up and wait. And I've been sort of feeling like, yeah, it's happening. It's going to go along, but it's like, you know, who knows when I don't know when people would say, when's it coming out? I don't know, you know, sometime, you know, next year or the spring, I don't know. But yeah, at some point it started to feel like my imaginary friend where you're like, yeah, yeah, that's cute, Christy, I'm not sure you're doing this
thing.
Sure,
you have a podcast. Well, so let's please talk just a little bit about the actual project now that it is coming out. It's a new podcast series on the joys of not knowing. It's called Uncertain. And tell us just a little bit more about what actually is your imaginary friend.
What is my imaginary friend? My imaginary friend is a short run podcast series from Scientific American. It's 5 episodes about uncertainty in science. And so it talks about uncertainty in very many different aspects of it as it pertains to science. And so the interesting thing is that it's a series, and so there are multiple episodes. Each episode, though, has to stand on its own, so it's a little bit different than anything I've done before, where in some ways it was a little bit like a book where there's sort of chapters and they build on one another, and there's definitely a narrative arc to the series, but at the same time, each individual episode needed to be able to stand alone because, you know, people drop in, they hear episode 3, maybe then they want to go back, I hope, and listen to the whole series. For people who were listening from start to finish, I really wanted to have that very nice narrative arc, but it had to be chunkable too, where you could just hear one part and still take away something and not feel like you were coming in, you know, halfway through a movie where you don't know what's going on.
Okay, so I like this, the structure of the project.
Yeah.
And let's talk more about that in a minute, but first let's talk just a little bit more about the subject of your podcast,
sure.
Uncertainty. why uncertainty?
That's a good question. I have been interested in uncertainty for a long time, particularly as it pertains to science. And so this project really sort of fell out of a lot of the research that I've been doing for years and reporting that I've been doing on science. And I've been doing a lot of reporting on something called meta-science, which is kind of the study of how science is done. It's pretty nerdy. It's stuff you have to be a real science nerd like me to be interested in it. But it's really about sort of methodology and kind of how the way that we do science impacts the way that, you know, the things that we learn, the answers that we get, et cetera. So this project really sort of fell out of some of the other science reporting that I've been doing and this realization that kind of came to me over time. One of my challenges as a reporter was helping my audience to really understand how science works. And I came at some point to realize that a lot of the public, I think, has unrealistic expectations of what science does and what it delivers. So the idea here is that science delivers a set of facts, that science is about truth, and like we know something, and there are these memes like, says science or because science, and that's great. And it's absolutely true that science is our most powerful tool for understanding the universe, for understanding things, for gaining knowledge. But uncertainty always underlies it. And sort of the thing that distinguishes science from pseudoscience or from quackery is that certainty. So if someone's coming to you and saying, this is absolute, this is, there's absolutely no question, this is 100% true, that's not science, because actual science, there's always just that tiny little bit. I mean, basically, science has to always be open to revision in the face of new evidence. This is always the case. And this has happened repeatedly in the history of science. And very often, it's not that everything we know about something is completely overturned, but it's like we know something, but then we learn something else that sort of refines that knowledge. And we keep refining and refining and refining. And there are certain things, you know, like we know the speed of light, and we know that with pretty good certainty. Do we know it with absolute certainty? I mean, that's where things get fuzzy. And I think, you know, people don't understand this. And so one of my ambitions for the show was to really help people understand that uncertainty is a part of science. It's not something to be afraid of, but it's also something that's sort of a feature of science. And one of the things, and this really happened a lot during the pandemic, is that this uncertainty regarding science is being weaponized against science. And so what happens is people say, oh, scientists changed their minds. See, they don't know anything. Or they told you this, but now they told you this other thing. Well, you know, as our understanding of things changes and evolves, you know, what we understand by necessity has to change. And so it's really the person who's saying, we know this, there's no question. That's the person you need to be worried about, and maybe not following quite so closely. In fact, I've been interested in this for a long time. Back when I was at 538, I wrote a story about this, about sort of the weaponization of uncertainty to undermine science. The title of that was There's No Such Thing as Sound Science, that was really looking at this conundrum.
You know, well, first of all, I want to say I love this. I mean, everything about this is exciting to me. I love uncertainty. Period. Just, I love thinking about uncertainty. And I especially love the paradox of science, which we think of as something very knowing, being paired with its relationship with uncertainty and how it's essential for science.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I want to go back to when I remember you coming up with this idea, Christy. And I think it had probably been forming a little bit at this point, but we were out walking. We were up above the Ridgeway Reservoir on a gorgeous trail. It was a gorgeous blue sky day. And you said to me, I think I'm going to do a pot. No. What did you say?
I said, hey, Rosemary, what do you think? I'm thinking about doing this project on uncertainty. And you freaked out.
I did. I went nuts. I got so excited about it.
I was sort of like, it was kind of funny, because in a way, this is a little bit meta, because this happened throughout the project. So, I mean, in retrospect, of course, I knew that you're probably the only person more obsessed or more interested in uncertainty than I am. So, of course, you were excited about the project. But it was fun to hear you say, oh, my God, I love uncertainty. Like, you should totally do that project. And of course, I did. But one thing that happened, so this has happened to me in other projects where I'm starting off, like, I remember this very distinctly when I was starting off writing my book. So here I've got this contract, I'm on the hook, like, I got to write this thing, I owe, like, you know, however many thousand words to my publisher on the science of exercise recovery, but I'm kind of groping around in the beginning. It's like, okay, what's this going to be? I kind of knew what I wanted to include, but I wasn't entirely sure. Like, I always feel like at the beginning of a project, I'm not entirely sure what I need to ask because I don't know yet what I don't know. And that's an important
uncertainty.
Part. It is. And it's an exciting part, but it's kind of like, okay, I'm feeling my way here. But I remember being very nervous. So the first thing that I did, so I want to just actually, I should back up really quickly and say that what ended up happening, the genesis of this project was my friend Anna, who's amazing, sent me this, I believe it was an email, maybe it was a text saying, hey, someone created a grant for you. You need to go get this. And I was like, what? But it was a grant funding projects about intellectual humility. Intellectual humility being basically this idea that you could be wrong and sort of holding that in your mind and sort of having a mindset that's open to changing course and being wrong, which of course is the idealized version of how scientists should be, right? But we all know that scientists are humans. So it doesn't always...
And not just science, right? That's how everything should be.
Right.
Yes, yeah, science too.
So anyway, I applied for this grant. And as I'm looking at it, you know, I initially intended, I thought, okay, I want to write a book about this. And I still intend to write that book. But what I decided was, hey, this is a great opportunity to get paid, you know, to get some funding, to do some initial research on this and to start my reporting and kind of gather my thoughts, which that actually all happened. So that it worked out as planned, which that never happens, right? You know, you best make plans never work. In this case, it did. But as I'm looking at the call for proposals, they also indicated that they would give more money for multimedia projects, and they seemed particularly interested in podcasts. And so I was like, oh, wow, yeah, I should propose a podcast because wouldn't that be fun? And so part of this was that I was really just, I think I'm kind of at a point in my career where I was feeling a little bit bored. I've done so much with print, and I still love print. It's my primary media. But it was like the thought of working in a different format and a different media was really exciting to me. And so I thought, well, this will be a really fun, like, not only could I get funding to research and jumpstart my reporting on this topic that I'm super excited about, but I could also do a different kind of project that I'm interested in doing. Like, I've always thought it would be fun to do this kind of, you know, very produced podcast, but I hadn't done it and I really didn't know what I was doing. But anyway, fast forward, I got the grant, Scientific American agreed to publish it. And so then it was like, oh, okay, so what do I do? And so the very first thing that I did is I went to the Santa Fe Institute, which is a very dear place to me. I kind of think of it almost as my intellectual home. It's a place, I was a journalism fellow there in 2015. It's just been a place where every time I go there, I just feel like my brain gets filled with interesting and fascinating, cool ideas. I never walk away without having some brilliant idea that hadn't come to me before, just sort of absorbing from all the wonderful people there. So I go there with my recorder and I'm like, I just want to talk to people about uncertainty. But I remember as I'm walking in and just thinking, oh gosh, like, I don't really know, like, I haven't really prepared questions. And I'm like, what am I doing? Like, it was this thing of like, and I thought, oh no, I'm going to sit down. And I'm going to say, okay, I'm working on this thing about uncertainty. And I want to ask you some questions. And they're going to say, okay, like what? And I would be like, because like I said, I really didn't have questions prepared. And instead, it was completely the opposite, Rosemary. It was like every single, and this is true, not just of the people at SFI, but across the board, every single researcher, every single scientist who I interviewed for this was just like, loving the topic. Like, I barely even had to ask questions. I mean, of course I did, and I was asking follow-ups and all that, but it was just, there was no, like, people were just so excited to talk about this. So that was really exciting because there was a moment at the very beginning where I was like, what have I gotten myself into?
And sure. Then,
the other thing is, in retrospect, it was kind of a dumb idea to do a podcast about uncertainty because, you know, when you think about, like, matching the media to the subject matter, like, this topic is very cerebral. If I was going to, like, just invent from scratch a podcast series on science, I would want something where it's like, here's this scientist out in the field, and here are some beautiful sounds of them doing something interesting. And, like, here it was all very, very cerebral. It was sort of people talking about ideas, which don't lend themselves all that well to audio. So that was a little bit of a challenge. And the other thing that I realized, you know, being from print, you know, in a print project, if someone says something really interesting, but they have a dull voice or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's like the words that mm-hmm. and you can also, you can summarize that, which I did. I mean, I ended up doing that with my narration quite a bit. But in audio, you really have to get good tape. And good tape is like tape that has emotion. It has to have some sort of feeling. And not everyone has that. Although I will say it ended up being the tape that I got from every single person I talked to ended up being better than I would have necessarily imagined. Like, people were just so passionate about this that it ended up being not as difficult as I might have imagined to get that good tape. But it really, as I'm going through, and, you know, I couldn't just look at the transcript. I mean, I could kind of use that to figure out sections that I was going to use and weaving together the story. But I really also then had to listen to the tape, because you have to hear it. You know, this is a sound. It's not something that you can put together on paper.
All right. I just have to say that I love how excited you are about this.
Like, I am, yeah.
You are. And you have been for a long time. And I've also gotten to see you very frustrated about it. But in the moment, I can really feel your enthusiasm, excitement. So I'm going to go way back. I just want to just notice a few things. I want to notice about process. Mm-hmm. One, that you had an idea that came out of, you know, you had written this article, it got you thinking on these other things, you know, so it's kind of this slow burn, right?
Yeah.
It's in your head, the seed's been planted, but nothing's happening. Then a friend says, I've seen something that will help you, right? And isn't it this way so often with projects where it does, it's nothing we were looking for, but because you've already had these seeds and you've been, you know, just started going in on them already with that article, just talking about it, thinking about it. So that when, you know, we had talked about it before you started with that uncertainty. So it was already something you were thinking of. It didn't yet have a form.
Yeah.
You get this little seed. Oh, that, you get it. You know, as it is, this little piece that came from Anna creates its own project and helps you to prepare for another. I mean, I just think it's beautiful looking at the architecture of how this happened, like any creative process, right? Where you have an enthusiasm and then the ways that it builds are in so many ways, Christy, unforeseeable. Like, you couldn't have planned that kind of thing. And you certainly wouldn't have planned to do a podcast about it. That wasn't anything you'd been thinking about.
I feel like I couldn't have planned it. I mean, it just ended up so perfect, but it was sort of organic the way it all fell together. And then the other thing I have to mention too, my friend Betsy really pushed me. She said, okay, because I was, you know, I'm looking at it. I knew it was like such a good match for my idea and sort of my interests. But then, you know, I had a lot of other things going on at that moment when the application was due. And I just remember being like really stressed, like, oh, I got to do this. And like, I don't know. And like, it would have been so easy to drop that ball. And this was a one-time deal. It wasn't like an ongoing. I couldn't look and see who had gotten this before. And they sort of had, I think there was an idea of sort of the scale, but they weren't even saying like how many people they would pick. It wasn't clear how competitive. So like, there was no clue as to whether I even had a chance to get this. And so she was really like, no, I'm not going to let you drop this ball. Like, you need to do this and like, you know, write a draft and sit. And that was great. And I really want to say that even though I did so much of this very much on my own, it was overall just such a group project. And the thing that really buoyed it was from Anna telling me, hey, you should look into this, to Betsy being so supportive and really helping me do that initial work that was required to get the money. And then, you know, once I had the grant, I have some friends who are like actual professional podcasters. I talked to them about like, oh my God, I have to write scripts. Like, how do I even do that? And they're like, well, we can't really tell you, but here are some, we can send you some scripts to look at. Like, I was sort of like, how do I even format this? Like, what does a script look like? Like, I mean, I was that much of a newbie. Like, I'd worked in radio years ago, so I wasn't like, that aspect wasn't so daunting, but just sort of the production side and editing and all of that. And a lot of that was a little bit on my own. But then in the final stages, I wrote all the scripts. I submitted them to my editor, Jeff Delvisio. He's fantastic. I mean, my very favorite part of this whole project was working with him, because he's brilliant and wonderful. And it's just, there's something really wonderful too about having a vision for something and then working with someone who makes it better. The same thing happened. We got this phenomenal logo that I really like and some art. I mean, the Scientific American team has just been fantastic. I feel so lucky to be working with them on that. So that's been really, really fun.
Well, it is. I mean, anytime we're working with someone else on what we're most passionate about, that's great, right?
And yeah.
Although I do remember you saying to me at some point that if you could do this again, you would ask yourself, hey, sweetheart, get help sooner.
Yeah.
Talk just a little bit about that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I definitely had a little bit of a self-consciousness about this project. Not like, oh, I can't believe they gave me the money. It wasn't imposter syndrome or anything like that. It was more like, I have never done this kind of podcast project before where it's like very produced and putting together scripts and all of that. And I didn't really feel like I knew what I was doing. I was kind of feeling my way in the dark. And so part of that was like, I had confidence that I could figure it out. But I was also a little bit self-conscious about like, oh, I don't really know what I'm doing here. So I was like, it wasn't that I was embarrassed to ask for help, but I was sort of like, am I doing this right? And so, and I also, you know, I didn't want to, it's a lot to ask someone to read your script, which is, I mean, these scripts were like 5,000 and 7,000 words each, you know, this is a long, it's not like a short little thing. And so I didn't, like, in retrospect, I wish that I had asked for a little bit of help on the scripts because I was kind of like figuring that out on my own. And I think I could have, you know, and I did do some changes midway through. One of the things that I did actually is I was asked to judge Journalism Award and I chose to be in the audio category, which was great. So I got to listen to a lot of really good podcasts. And I did that deliberately. And it was great because I really, you know, it's sort of like the best way to get better at doing something is to really pay attention to how is this sausage made. And so after listening to all those great podcasts, I was like, oh, well, I should do this and I could try that. And so that was really helpful.
Let's just notice, by the way, that you've done some really smart things with this project. Like this is an example, right, of choosing to judge other people's audio work.
Yeah.
So that you have fine-tune your ear for what am I listening? What makes a good podcast? Yeah. What makes a good clip? What makes, you know, that. So that's super smart. And another thing super smart is just this idea of, oh, could I be paid to do the research for this book I'm thinking about? You know, so I want to point out that I really admire how methodical in a way, right? Like, yeah, I mean, or at least when these opportunities showed up, you thought, oh, this can really help me.
Yeah. Yeah. I was receptive to them. And I think this goes back to, you know, my mantra for this year is openness and just sort of being open to opportunities and figuring it out. And I kind of feel like the magic really happens when you're sort of open to things and you're deliberate and you're trying, but you're also, there's something about trying too hard too that can be sort of self-defeating. So it's like, you know, oh, there's this opportunity and I'm going to try this. And instead of, I could have.
That's a great point.
You know, in retrospect and seeing like who got funded and all that, I think that it would have been, you know, they probably would have also funded me to do this project in some sort of print form. But I think this was just a much better, like overall, first of all, I was so fun to do something new and to learn something new. And I would love to do another podcast series. I really enjoyed that. So that was fun, you know, to get that new experience. But I feel like it just also, because it was a different format, it pushed me in new ways. And so it really gave me new energy for the project that I don't think I would have had to the same degree had I like just proposed a long magazine article or some other, you know, print thing. And now, you know, I've had an opportunity to really gather my thoughts. I have a lot of material that ended up on the cutting room floor that's like ready for a book or whatever I end up doing next. So yeah, really, it worked out really nicely.
I can't help but wonder, you know, let's just say you could go back and tell older Christy, younger Christy, I guess, you know, get help sooner. But do you think there was any benefit to that struggle that you went through? Like, did anything come from you not knowing? Hello, uncertainty.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. You know, I didn't really know. And there was a long period where I had all these scripts and I was looking over. And I find this in any sort of long form project where I just need to kind of sit with things for a while. And it always feels like you're not doing anything, but you really are because you're thinking about it a lot. And I was going back and sort of looking at the transcripts and thinking about it and kind of, you know, the first step in this process was really to sort of decide. And, you know, I did talk to Jeff about, okay, how long do you think the episodes can be? You know, some of this is like, what do you have the bandwidth to work on? Because, you know, this was sort of a project that dropped in his lap, like, oh, I have to do this too. Okay, great. I was very aware of that too. You know, I did not want to take up too much of his time, although I really felt like at some point this became a passion project of his too, which was really nice. But, you know, there is that that part where you're just kind of in the struggle, but it's just you need that time to kind of sit with it. And I think it can be helpful to talk to other people and ask for help, but there is something a little bit solitary about that where you just have to sort of figure it out. And I remember when I was working on my book, and at one point I had asked my editor about something, and he was just sort of like, and he's great. This is going to sound like I'm a slam on him, but it's not. He was kind of like, you'll figure it out. And I was like, that's not helpful. But like, it was actually true. Like, I just needed to sit with it a little bit. And it was, I'm recalling now, it was kind of about how to make this, I was struggling with this particular chapter and making it into like, you know, and I remember him using this word, well, it just needs a chapteriness or like, you know, I'm like, well, what is that? He's like, I can't tell you, you'll figure it out. And I did. And I couldn't teach it to someone else, honestly, probably, but it's just, yeah, there is something, sometimes you just have to be in it.
Yeah. That's it. There it is. It is the value of letting yourself exist in that uncertainty.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I wonder, will you tell us, who do you wish would listen to this podcast?
Oh, that's a great question. This podcast, I really hope that people who are interested in science, who are consumers of science, will listen. I'm hopeful that it might be used maybe with college students, you know, who are taking science classes to really understand. I mean, a lot of it is about how science works, the scientific process, how we know things. How do we sort of meet this issue, which is that all science is uncertain, and yet we can know things and we do know things, and sort of, and that's where the series ends. The final episode is about that very issue. Like, how is it that we can know things when there is this lingering uncertainty always? And of course, mm-hmm. you know, one of the answers to that is that there are degrees of uncertainty, but it's important to understand that it's always still there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm excited that our listeners, if you are a paid subscriber, will get to listen to a short part of Christy's new podcast next week in our bonus episode. And I guess the last question, Christy, one that I know you like to ask other people, how will you know, what does success look like for you with this project?
Oh, yeah. I love that question. And, you know, it's funny. I was just out in Berkeley a few weeks ago. It was the end of the grant, and all of us grantees were getting together and presenting our work and everything. And this was something that we talked about quite a bit, just amongst ourselves, not formally. But it was interesting to talk to people and see what their answers were. But for me, I feel like, well, first of all, this project is already at this moment, like, successful beyond my dreams for it. Because what does success look like for me on this? Number one was, you know, I really, my number one objective for this project was to get not just money, but sort of the bandwidth and sort of the, there's something that happens when you have a deadline, right? Where you have to do the work. Like, it's easy for passion projects mm-hmm. like this. Mm-hmm. Like, you just never get around to them because they're so important. Like, you kind of need the deadline. So that was important. I had this sort of impetus. I had a deadline. I had this obligation to produce something. But I was able to really dig in to do this reporting that I really wanted to do. So that was success number one. Success number two was learning something new and trying this new format. And that was amazing and awesome and so much fun. And that, you know, that was really the joy of this. And it's funny because there was no point in this whole process where I felt like, ugh, I hate this part. I can't, you know, every time I'm actually in the middle of a big magazine feature right now, and it's just driving me kind of crazy because it's still a little bit of a hot mess. I hope my editor's not listening. But there's always a part where I'm like, why am I doing this? I don't need to do this. Like, this is hard. Like, and I never felt this with the podcast because every single part of it was so fun. Even like the most tedious part was I had to go back, and after I had put together all the scripts and everything, I had to pull the little pieces of audio, and it was very time consuming, and I had to pick out those things and snip them and send them to the editor who actually put everything together and did the sound design and all that. So I did all of the recording. I did all of that, you know, finding things and all that. So that was tedious, but it was still fun because it was like, ooh, I love the way he says this, the energy and all of that. So yeah, I guess I found a new medium that I really enjoy. So maybe I'll get another chance to do this.
I am so proud of you, Christy. Aww. Congratulations. Congratulations.
Well, I just want to say thank you for your support, friend. And also, I want to just thank my other support people here, Laura and Anna and Betsy. And of course, Jeff, my editor, was amazing. So, yeah.
You
You've been listening to Emerging Form. This is Rosemary Wetolet-Tromer, and my co-host is science writer Christy Ashwanden. Our fabulous audio producer is Cherie Turner, and our music is created and performed by Kira Kopostansky and edited by Leah Shaw. Kate LaRue designed our logo, and Jack Mueller, of course, inspired our work and the name of this podcast. As he always said, you must obey the poem's emerging form. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to Emerging Form. Did you know that for just a few bucks a month, you can become a paid subscriber and get bonus episodes every other week? Go to emergingform.substack.com to sign up. And if you really want to help us out, leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks for listening.